I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Geoffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. Thank you for bearing with us. But here we are back again.
Yep.
A new season. Mm-hmm. A new season of podcasts.
Yeah.
Now, at the end of the last season, I remember asking a question called, what's the difference, or is there a difference, between a sociopath and a psychopath?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
I'd done a television, and when I was asked this question, well, our ever-present listeners, one of whom replied to my question.
Oh, well, that's good.
She is a psychologist. She's called Jane. And she wrote a very interesting and lengthy letter to me. She says, I've seen plenty of both over the years. They never come to reflect or explore what's going on for them in their lives. They only turn up because it's conditional, such as a legal case coming up, and this little thinks a psychologist will look good in court. So definition-wise, I think it's wonderful. You're amazing what you get, really. Mm-hmm. To start with, sociopath is not a legally recognised term. It could be referred to as antisocial personality disorder. That's legally recognised, obviously. Sociopath is more of a social term to apply to someone or for someone to boast about themselves, whereas a psychopath is a clinical term, and as you know, it can be used as part of their defence at trial. Although both have common traits, such as lack of empathy, indifference to others' distress or suffering, no remorse, etc., when it comes to deceit and manipulation, psychopaths are head and shoulders above any sociopath. Psychopaths have an innate ability to fake care, interest, use superficial charm or mimic. What is required in any social, work or personal situation to ultimately get what they want? The psychopath plays the long game. They wait, they plot and plan. Whereas a sociopath can't do that. They neither have the skills, they want to be or want to be bothered, and don't have the patience. They just go at something or someone full pelt, and because they're so frightening, they're often rewarded. So the behaviour reward cycle continues. The sociopath has poor impulse control and wants gratification, revenge or stimulation right now.
That's very good.
And I think that's a most accurate. However, she goes on, and she's very, very, very clever. She's writing a book called 10 Murders, 10 Reasons Why.
Let us know when it comes out.
Oh, I've already said that. Unlike the sociopath, a quick way of describing them is a hot-headed sociopath, explosive temper, demanding, quite proud of their reputation, someone who likes to frighten people, whereas the psychopath is cool-headed, keep their thoughts to touch themselves, hard to read, but be planning and plotting their revenge or manipulation of others.
That makes sense. All makes sense.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. What? If only she was with us on the podcast so she could answer the questions rather than me bumbling around being like, well, I'm not really sure.
Well, we have done it. But what also raised it, I've received another email. This came to me just before Christmas. Mm-hmm. I received another email from a prisoner who said, you must look at the case that we're going to look at today. Because I think this is a case of a psychopath.
Full psychopath.
A proper psychopath.
Great. It promises to be jolly then.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you could call it jolly, Mo, but...
I was being ironic. Ironical.
But it's certainly an interesting case, and it has a very interesting legal conclusion.
Okay, great. What is it?
It's the case of Donald Andrews.
Donald Andrews. We're just going to call it that, the case of Donald Andrews.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Do you want to do it?
I want to do it.
Okay, well, this is the case of Donald Andrews.
On the 8th of September 2011, Donald Andrews was drinking in a pub called the Star and Garter in Bromley High Street. He spotted a young woman who was 29 called Victoria Legg, who was with her friends, but she was also arguing with what appeared to be her boyfriend. Donald Andrews, forever able to be charming if he chose to be, said, "Oh, you must be so upset. Don't worry. You can call a cab from my flat. I just live round the corner." Well, obviously upset, perhaps having a little bit to drink, she doesn't see this as in any way worrying at all. She escorts Andrews to his flat to phone a cab to get her to take her home. But the trouble is, Andrews gets into the flat and double locks the door and attacks her. He attacks her repeatedly over the following 12 hours, rapes her repeatedly. He then forces her to take a bath to avoid any forensic evidence. He then says he's going to take her home, but decides not to, and instead takes her some nearby woods, where he proceeds to rape her again, and this time he tells her he's going to cut her up into little pieces, because I've killed two people before. I think he's changed his mind during the course of the ordeal, from getting her to take a bath to deciding he'll get rid of her. And he then beats her unconscious and throws her over some railings into the River Quaggy in Bromley, essentially leaving Victoria Legg for dead. She survives. Not surprisingly, Andrews is rapidly caught. She can describe him. There's no doubt he's guilty. And indeed, when he's charged and brought before the magistrate on the way to the Crown Court, he pleads guilty to 6 counts of rape, kidnap, false imprisonment, actual bodily harm, and grievous bodily harm with intent. It emerged that he had 18 previous convictions, including 2 for manslaughter. In 1984, for example, he got 6 years in youth custody for the manslaughter of a 19-year-old paranoid schizophrenic in December 1982. In February 1985, he got 9 years for manslaughter and aggravated burglary after stabbing a pensioner to death in 1988. This is a profoundly dangerous man. In 1999, he was charged with robbery and theft for stealing the takings from a friend's pub. In 2003, he got 6 years, later extended to 8 years, for indecent assault and actual bodily harm after attacking a woman he met in a Croydon bar. Victoria Legg gave a victim impact statement to the court. She said, and it's heartbreaking this, "Since this happened, I feel that my life is over. I'm a shadow of my former self and I live in fear. I can never get away from the pain. Before this happened, I was very sociable and outgoing. But then, and more than anything, I love to dance. I'm terrified of water now. I've tried to go out many times, but every time I get to the door, my legs stop working and I start to cry. Every time I close my eyes, I can see him and feel his weight on top of me." Detective Inspector Tom Wilkinson called Andrews a violent sexual predator who subjected his victim to the most appalling levels of violence before leaving her for dead in a stream. Andrews became the only man not to be convicted of murder, but to be given a whole life term for rape. He confessed. There was no question of the jury having to decide. But, and here's the legal twist. In her impact statement, Victoria Legge says, he told me he would cut my tongue out so I couldn't talk to the police, and cut off my fingers so I couldn't type, and burn my eyes so I couldn't see. She suffered a broken pelvis in the attack and attended court in a wheelchair. Andrews was given a whole life term. Sadly, Victoria Legge, a few months later, took her own life. I think it's probably the most moving, saddest case you can imagine. In 2015, the Court of Appeal ruled that the whole life term for Andrews was too harsh, and he should serve a minimum of 12 years, meaning that he's theoretically eligible for parole in 2024. Lord Justice Treacy said, and I quote, "We emphasise that this new sentence in no way diminishes the extreme danger posed by the offender and the terrible harm that he has caused. In the circumstances, there is no real prospect of this offender being released." I wonder if that's the case. This was raised to me by a man who'd been in prison in Maidstone with Andrews, who said he used to boast about it. The police don't know everything. It seems to me that he is an extremely dangerous man. But we know the parole board. He could groom the system. We've seen people almost groom the system many times.
Yeah.
He's now not quite 60.
What's the deal? Are we doing like 1 week of podcasts where people are killed, hanged for crimes they shouldn't be, and then people being let out for...
for worse crimes?
They should never be ever let out ever into society for.
Well, that wasn't what the Court of Appeal decided in 2015.
But what? But why? Why would you say?
Because they said theoretically, whole life sentence is reserved to someone who commits murder.
But he wanted her to be dead,
and she was.
And then she did take her own life. Which is that not the equivalent?
Well, that wasn't what the way the Court of Appeal interpreted it. Now, you could argue, I would be perfectly prepared to argue, that that was a mistake on the part of the Court of Appeal.
I would say so.
But they are still the Court of Appeal.
And he is a psychopath by Jane's description.
I think so. Don't you? Mm. Charm, manipulative. He's got all the classic psychopath symptoms.
Yeah.
Including pleading guilty.
I don't think... he doesn't sound like the sort of person who should be bobbing around outside.
No, I don't think so either. But how many times have we talked about, you know, the parole system? Not just John Warboys, the black cab rapist. Time after time, we've pointed out that the parole board doesn't pay attention to the original offence.
Do you think that's interesting as well, isn't it? Because did you see that thing on the news this week about the student who recorded her rapist and then released the recording?
Yes.
Just referring back to last week when we discussed, you know, women being put... do you think that they see it as lesser because the charge was rape? I just think it's interesting because the woman on... whose case I was reading about this week had said that she had been made to feel in many instances that she, you know, by the justice system, that she, like, it wasn't as big a deal as it was, sort of thing. I don't know how to say that eloquently. Well, but I don't know, I think it's interesting, like, in some senses, we look at rape and say, like, it's equivalent to murder or manslaughter or whatever. But then I'm not sure that we totally follow through on it. Like, the difficulty that women have in getting people to understand what level of crime that is, like what a deep, like, awful violation, and like how soul destroying it is and what it can do to you. And it's like forces this woman, not just that part of the assault, but like to take her own life. Like, you take something completely away from something, someone that is totally irreparable. Like, that will never, no amount of therapy can fix that.
I think Victoria Legge's mother put it very well when she said, he shouldn't be given any rights because he didn't give my daughter any rights. It's hard to believe another human being can be like this. He doesn't see that he's done anything wrong.
Yeah, it's that, isn't it? It's like that interesting thing about violence against women. Like, he was just like, I see an opportunity that I'm going to exploit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he didn't even think of Victoria as a human being. He's just like, I'm going to just violate that. I don't care. That's what I want to do. I give no shits, basically.
Yes. Well, I think that's my psychopath point.
Yeah.
Really. No sense of other people's feelings.
No empathy.
No empathy, whatever.
What Jane said.
But also that capacity to be premeditated.
Yeah, or capitalise on an opportunity. It's kind of both, is it not?
It is.
Because it's not like, we don't know whether he went to the pub that night thinking like, oh, who can I abduct today? But he saw an opportunity and exploited it.
Yeah.
And he capitalised on someone's vulnerability.
Yes.
I was listening to, I'm really fascinated by that documentary series that journalist is doing about child abuse in private schools.
Yes.
Alex, someone, his name is. It's called In Dark Corners. It's on Radio 4. I'd highly recommend. Anyway, so they're doing like a follow-up to it.
Yeah.
About these two particular teachers who've been accused of sexual assault who moved to South Africa. And one of the accusers was saying, alleged victims, was saying how he was like a sitting duck because he was vulnerable. He came from a broken home. Like, yeah. You know, he was so easy for him to be singled out by this predator.
Yes.
You know, again, that's a psychopathic tendency to see weakness in someone as something that can be exploited.
Can be exploited.
Rather than,
I agree,
something that you try to protect.
Well, I just think, again, it's a very interesting case. I personally would side with the trial judge, and I think the whole life term was appropriate.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think even the possibility of parole, given the weaknesses in the parole system that there have been revealed time after time, because the parole system, as I've explained on a number of occasions, pays no attention to the original offence. It pays attention only to the behaviour of the offender during his time in prison. Well, a psychopath is more than capable of gaming the system.
Yeah, but that doesn't even seem like, I don't even think there's even, I don't know enough about the parole board, but like, you hear of people sort of trying to get parole who, you get the sense, really are trying to be rehabilitated. It's harder for them to get parole than it is for someone like him.
It's a very, very good question.
It's just a wonky system, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a wonky system.
I think the big problem is not taking into account the original offence.
And also, I don't understand why, if he beat her unconscious and threw her into
the stream,
a body of water, he wasn't expecting her to survive. So
no.
How is that different from murder, really? Just because she didn't live, but then she did. I mean, I hate to say it, but probably she, in some sense, it would have been better if she had, you know, I don't mean that. I know that's a callous thing to say.
He subjected her to months and months of absolute
intolerable
pain and suffering. It's a very, very chilling story.
Yeah, it's horrible.
But I'm very grateful to his fellow inmate for pointing me in the direction of it.
Well, we should keep an eye out then, I guess.
And there is, of course, I mean, he is, and I emphasised it at the time, he becomes eligible for parole next year. I'm not saying he's going to get parole next year. I'm simply saying that he will be eligible. And that is enough to send a shiver down my spine.
What's your opinion on vigilantes?
It's a Have you got an hour or so? I mean,
not right now.
Well, I think it's
we've got time for you to give me a fair idea.
Well, I don't approve of vigilante justice. I don't approve of an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
You're a New Testament man, not an Old Testament man.
I am, I'm afraid. But I do have, and I confess it freely, the greatest sympathy for the relatives of people whose lives have been taken or fundamentally transformed by an act of violence. And I think sometimes it is very difficult for them not to wish to take some kind of revenge. And my goodness me, my heart goes out to them, because I can't imagine what it must be like and what they must feel and how incredibly upset when they see that justice is not seen to them to be done.
I was thinking about that as well this week. I was listening to the radio and, you know, I know that the Home Secretary was looking at the changing of the laws around the responsibility of the owners of social media companies if they don't protect children. That's a very loose way of saying exactly what's going on. Yeah. I don't know specifically. But a lady came on to talk who had become a kind of advocate for the protection of children and trying to put these laws into place because her son had taken his own life at 17 after being like mercilessly bullied online. And I thought about what that takes, like what does that mean when you've suffered something so horrendous and then you make the decision that you cannot rest without. And I know this is a very common result of trauma for people who suffer trauma against loved ones, to be like, I've got to do something, you know. I suppose
vengeance.
Yeah, but I suppose it's different from, it's not vengeance in quite the same way as it's just like this continual need to make sure that we're trying to do something to stop it happening to other people, which is sort of the best thing that you can do, I suppose, and like a way to channel your grief. You know, obviously, I know we've talked lots about victims' relatives who've set up, you've campaigned, and you
Sarah's
know,
Law, there yeah, are so
yeah,
many.
Yeah, past laws, and yeah, it's that's, I suppose, the sort of positive side of vigilantism in some way. It's not vigilantism, but you know what I mean.
I do. I don't think it is vigilantism. I mean, the online safety bill, which is the one you're referring to. They wanted to bring back, they wanted an amendment which said that
you could imprison
leaders of social media movements if it could be proven that they had affected children or allowed the abuse of children online, should be susceptible to a two-year prison sentence.
Interesting one.
It is an interesting one. Is that vigilantism?
Well, it's I think it's interesting, isn't it? Because from it's like trying to, it's people trying to make somebody responsible where we're allowing the internet to be, to remain unpoliced. Like, we have systems to regulate what's on television. We have systems to regulate what goes in the newspaper. We've worked hard to implement those systems, having seen what happens if you don't have them. But even though we've had the internet since 2000 and whatever, early 2000s, we still don't do anything about it and the dangers of what's happening. Even, I've come off social media completely and I'm interested in this idea that I'm kind of like missing out on information because I don't have access to it. And I was listening, you know, but I think it comes eventually to me. I only listen to the Today programme on Radio 4 once a day. It's like my full news intake. And I occasionally look at the news on BBC website. So I'm looking at very specific and listening to very specific news. But like even Andrew Tate, for example, who's like obviously all over the news right now, like
influencer arrested.
That is an unpoliced, so that's internet based issue.
Internet based misogyny.
And that wouldn't be allowed. It's not like he could pamphlet and write misogynistic commentary and send it round to all the young men in the UK and the rest of the world.
No.
or put it in a, or write a column in a paper, or do a television program or a radio show.
No.
It's gone slightly off topic, but anyway.
No, no. No.
These things have been on my mind.
Oh, that's good. That's excellent.
Hmm.
Anyway, that, I think that the case of Donald Andrews is striking.
Hmm.
Because it asks us a lot.
It raises a lot of questions.
As you know, I'm always fascinated by moral dilemmas, mm. you know. And I think it's a particularly acute moral dilemma. Mm. Is a man like Andrews...
I don't think it is. I think he should just stay in prison.
Theoretically capable of rehabilitation? Answer, probably, I suppose, I don't think so.
But then is the question, does it beg a question then, like, is he capable of further... crime?
Yes.
At 60, is he?
He's nearly 60.
Okay, at nearly 60. Well, yeah, he's got another 20 years of being a bad man.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. On the other hand, he might probably say, tell the parole board that he's totally changed.
And persuade them such. Mm. Well, that's jolly. Thanks.
No, I'm not trying to make you miserable, Mo. I'm just trying to say it's another moral issue, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where does the reality lie? The answer is we won't know. We don't know. It's such a grey area. It's a fantastically grey area.
Law is a kind of grey area, yes. In itself, because we make laws and then we don't change them or do change them according to who.
Yes. All I would pretty accurately predict is if there were genuinely to be the suggestion that Andrews was to be granted parole, I think there would be one hell of a stink.
I hope so. I'd be happy to contribute to the stink, and I've only just found out about him.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the case of Donald Andrews.
Thank you very much.
I don't know, you look as if you're thanking me. Oh, you made my life a misery today.
You're trying to make my blood boil on this morning.
It's a story, but I did think it was a very good case.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly.
And thank you to the gentleman who suggested it.
Yes, who's called Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Do you want to tell me something fun you're doing to cheer me up?
Okay. We're going to see Sam's film.
Oh, yes. Our producer's made a short film. We're going to see that. That'll be fun.
We're going to see that.
We're going on holiday soon.
Oh, we're going to Glasgow and Edinburgh.
We're going on a tripette, aren't we, Geoffrey?
We are. Very exciting. We're going on the train, Molly and I.
We are. We're going on a trip. We haven't been on holiday together for a long time.
No.
I mean, we're spending a weekend in Edinburgh and going to Glasgow for a day, but I mean, I'm going to call it a holiday.
Oh, I'll call it a holiday too.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. No, we haven't. Crikey, I can't even remember the last
time. We went to Madrid and we went to Paris.
And we went to Paris, that's right.
But we went with Rawnsley. We went to Madrid on our own. But we went to Paris with, well, Rawnsley came with us and Nu was already there.
Nu was singing, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Beggar's Opera, yeah.
But Madrid we went on our own, but that was a long time ago.
Well, it was. You were still at Tavistock Wood, weren't you?
Was I even at Tavistock? Was I not at university?
No, I think you were at Tavistock Wood because
really?
You had to buy postcards at the Prada.
Oh.
Did you remember?
No, not really.
No, you went to buy postcards. You were very determined. Angharad would wanted postcards.
Okay, all right. Well, then some point between 2008 and 2014.
Yeah.
The early end, I guess. Probably around like 2010, maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I remember that you couldn't do supper on the final day.
Yeah, I was done. the wine and food consumption got the better of me.
Yes,
Molly, it wouldn't now because my stamina has greatly
Molly
improved.
Retired to bed.
Couldn't do it, Dad. Couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it.
It happened in Paris as well. Couldn't do that either.
No, but we went to bed quite early in Paris. We didn't stay up as long as the opera singers, did we?
No.
We went back to the hotel.
No, but I mean, I think I couldn't do any more meals.
I think you bailed out.
I think on the train on the way home, I was like, you guys on your own. I can't do this anymore. I'm done.
Well, thanks, Mo. Thanks for all you do.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much to all the people who help us. Our producer, Sam Brain, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who did our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Geoffrey for doing all the hard work, and to you, the listeners, thank you very much.
Yes, most of all, thank you for listening. and do be careful out there.